everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the CINT podcast. I'm Melissa Minko. I'm our Director of Retail Strategy, and joining me today, I have the lovely Alicia Esposito, VP of Content at Retail Touchpoints. Alicia, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited for this conversation.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. The tables have turned now. I'm excited to be here.
Exactly. I know. I really like having you in this seat. This will be a really fun conversation. So you and I have been chatting about this topic offline for a while because it's something that we're both really interested in and passionate about. And that topic is celebrities as creative directors at all different kinds of brands and companies. But I really first just wanted us to define the role of a creative director, because I do think we're seeing kind of loose interpretations right, as these brands are employing celebrities for this job. So how do you tend to think about the role of creative director? Like, what responsibilities does it tend to involve in your mind?
Yeah. And I think I probably look at this more through the lens of a content creator and like someone who helps shape brands. So typically when I think about creative director, I think of someone who oversees creative direction and execution. And that's largely typically through like visual aesthetics, you know, whether that be brand or the visuals you use, you know, ways to ensure a consistent and cohesive look and feel, whether it be for a brand campaign, a pop-up store, or even a new product line, right? Like, it's just like how the brand shows up. But to that end, I'm finding more and more that, you know, we're seeing creative directors require a bit more of like a holistic business sense. And so like they understand business strategy, product strategy, and even content strategy, right? Because all of these areas are playing together and they also all impact the brand and how it shows up. So I think the creative director kind of sits at the top of that and just ensures that as everything funnels through to these different functions, that it remains true to the brand and how it aims to show up, basically. I don't know. What do you think? Maybe I'm off base.
No, that's totally, I love that you emphasize the visual aesthetics aspect, because I do think, especially as our society becomes more visual, thanks to social media, there is way more of a focus on that from the perspective of brand consistency. And like you said, how a brand shows up. I have just always been so intimidated by the title creative director. I always thought it was just this massive dot connector between so many different entities, both internal at a company and external, you know, agency partners and the like. And so hearing these celebrities inherit these roles, I think is really interesting, because it's definitely great. Because in some ways, ironically, it's almost kind of democratizing the role, because many of these celebrities don't have the background required of a creative director in the past. But at the same time, it's also doing the opposite of democratizing it, because it's giving it to someone who hasn't earned it from an educational background and has really only earned it from some sort of curated aesthetic that they've created for themselves and their own personal brand. And so I think it's interesting that a big brand can decide, oh, the way this one person has managed their own personal brand shows me that they can manage my massive brand in the same way. That seems like a really big assumption, which also tells me that then they're maybe giving them less responsibilities than a typical creative director would have, and they're giving them more support potentially. But we've heard a lot of celebrities speak out and say, no, I really am so involved in everything. I'm working 15-hour days during our busiest seasons to make sure that I'm on set and that I'm at the fit meetings and that I'm at the design meetings and I'm at the agency meetings and all this stuff. So it's just fascinating to me that this is how things have evolved. And it also makes me think about things like, why wouldn't you just make them an influencer or a brand ambassador for your brand? And also, and I know we'll get into this, but what does product placement look like then? Like, are we all in this kind of simulation where we're being advertised to constantly and it's way more implicit than we think it is when there's a creative director behind the scenes that's a celebrity?
Right. I think there's a really interesting dissonance there that you called out, right? Because they don't do this every day. They weren't, you know, necessarily trained to be a creative director. They may not have the educational coverage that a typical creative director may have. But as I dug into some recent examples, it's been interesting to see like how the matchmaking happens, right? Like which brands go after which celebrities. And as you start to peel back the layers, you're like, oh, well, that actually kind of makes sense because this celebrity or this persona is always known for XYZ. And there's like that association that already exists for them as their own personal brand, right? Like, let's face it, especially now with social media, these individuals have more control over their personal brand and how they show up. It's not, let's face it, they all have people, but like, if say Jennifer Aniston is posting something on her Instagram, you know, they may have a person to help manage the schedule, but you get those little glimpses of like their personal lives and they're still curating that. You know what I mean? So I think it's really interesting to see those partnerships that they establish and how they reaffirm that connection through their own content as well. And like you said, like product placement probably plays a role in that, but I think it just speaks to the thought and intention that brands need to have when it comes to these types of roles versus just hiring this actress or this model for an ad campaign. It seems like there are different levers or tiers to these types of partnerships, which I find really interesting because the strategy has to be shaped based on those tiers too.
Yeah. Well, and when you mentioned the lifestyle element and how you'll see both what they're doing at the brand level, but then also how they're kind of bringing the brand into their own personal life, which is automatically a level of influencing marketing as well. It makes me think about how I've heard some influencers say that influencer marketing has an extremely high ROI when it's successful, like when the influencer is chosen appropriately for a brand, because it's one person, it's quite inexpensive to pay them or give them a discount or whatever. And then they have this crazy large reach. And something I was reading when I was doing research for this episode with you was that a lot of creative directors who are not celebrities have been really kind of outraged by hiring celebrities because they assume that they're going to be the highest paid person on the payroll and it's going to be way different than the typical salary range. But when you say this thing about lifestyle, it makes me think that maybe they deserve a really high payroll level because they're doing two kinds of marketing at the same time. And there's that additional ROI that a creative director that's not a celebrity wouldn't be able to drive because their lifestyle isn't something people are watching. People don't know who they are. No one's paying attention to that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, especially if these creative directors help shape the product portfolio at all, mm-hmm. whether it be through a capsule collection or a series of collections, like they help just shape the future product lines, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was looking at Hillary Duff being hired as the chief mom officer of yeah. Carter's, which at first I was like, okay, wow, that's really smart because, you know, people in our audience, in our demographic, largely know her as Lizzie McGuire. And it's like, oh, I'm a mom. Lizzie McGuire's a mom. Like, this is awesome. Like, I love her. And she's doing a capsule collection. So it kind of ties in like, okay, she's not just representing Carter's as a brand. She's creating something distinct and unique for them. So it's like, again, multidimensional. And like, there are a few different layers there that I think kind of validate the impact that directors can make when you kind of shape that relationship appropriately.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. It is really interesting that there are more connections that a celebrity creative director is able to make, but also less of an educational background a lot of times. So it kind of balances out, I guess, but it's mm-hmm. just interesting for sure. So you said that you were looking at examples of celebrity creative directors, and you also mentioned Hillary Duff is the chief mom officer. Are there any other celebrity creative director examples that you kind of wanted to unpack or just explore a little bit more while we're talking about that?
Yeah. So a few that really have stood out to me for a few different reasons. So Jennifer Aniston, she's the chief creative officer, not quite chief like brand officer or product officer, but chief creative officer for Vital Proteins. And I just thought this was just a really smart connecting point because everybody knows her as like the epitome of health and wellness, but like through a more approachable lens. Like obviously Gwyneth Paltrow is trying to own like the luxury higher end wellness space. And I just think people associate Jennifer Aniston as being like down to earth, really approachable. Like she's the chick that like goes out and surfs at like 7 a.m. and then just like makes a smoothie and makes it looks really easy. Hangs out with her dogs and it's just like amazing. So I just thought like, wow, this is like a really natural fit and it just makes perfect sense. So when she's making her smoothie and she's like sharing recipes and like, oh, by the way, she's making it with Vital Proteins products, like it just like makes sense to me because that brand is known for being relatively accessible. Like it's sold through a lot of different platforms, e-commerce sites and stores. And, you know, it's a product line that, you know, they put their money where their mouth is. Like the product is good, the product works, and it can be used in a lot of different ways. Another one that really stands out to me, and I'm sure you have thoughts on it, is Cardi B being the creative director in residence for Playboy. Because I know we talked about this, right? Because Playboy spoke at our retail innovation conference and expo around their metaverse strategy. And their metaverse strategy is kind of connecting to their efforts to become more of like a creator platform. So like, I thought this was a really interesting tie-in because obviously Cardi B has a lot of different partnerships. She's like a spokesperson for a lot of different things, but she's kind of helping shape that next era of that brand. And like, she's really known through social media. She's known for her creativity. She's obviously like an artist, and she's also like super fun and spunky and like out there too. So I just feel like it's like a really fun, not direct connection, but like the more you peel back the layers, you're like, oh, like this actually makes a lot of sense. But I don't know what you think about it.
I loved it. I thought that one, to your point, made a lot of sense. It was brilliant. And I really liked, I actually wasn't aware of, you know, the creative or the creator platform aspect of it, but you're totally right. I mean, that completely fits. She is known for being very much in control of her own music and her aesthetic. She is a businesswoman, absolutely. And she makes that very clear through her Instagram presence. So I could, and her work ethic too. So I could just see all of that translating. And you know, this narrative that finally society is embracing of female empowerment and female reclamation of sex symbols and sexualization of women, I think makes a ton of sense to have a female creative director who is passionate about their sexuality and not really covering it up, but doing it in a way that allows them to feel in control. So I just thought it was also like a really brilliant social move for them, or kind of like social activist move without being political in any sort of way, which was really cool. So,
right. Yeah. It's definitely a really interesting build up, I think, from a storytelling standpoint, because like you said, like Cardi B is someone who just like owns who she is, like she's out there and she encourages women to be their true selves. And I think it's a very powerful play on the behalf of Playboy, because I think they're trying to reposition themselves as a brand of empowerment as well. And I think the creator platform, it's called Centerfold, is just kind of testament to that. So it's like they're trying to create these building blocks that are shaping the future of their brand direction and, again, how they show up in the world, right? Because there was always that kind of cringy association with the brand, but it seems like they're trying to make some measures to shift that direction a little bit, which is great.
That's so cool. And I specifically sought out the speaker session that had Playboy at your conference, Rice, and I really enjoyed them talking about NFTs and how they're thinking about it. And it was really the first time I had heard execution and strategy around NFTs that I was actually interested in. It made sense and it aligned both with the product and the direction of the brand and also the interests of their new up and coming consumers. So yeah, I think they have just a really holistic strategy. And that's exactly what I think you and I are getting at, this prime example of a comprehensive creative strategy. And that's really what a creative director should tie together. I think you also used the word accessible when you were talking about Jennifer Aniston, that I thought was so interesting, because there are parts of her that seem girl next door because of her character on Friends. But I also tend to think of her as someone who is so not accessible, like relatable, when it comes to her health and wellness journey. And so that reminds me of really the creative director that sparked this whole conversation for the two of us, which is Kate Moss for Diet Coke.
Right.
She's the new creative director for Diet Coke. They are approaching their 40th birthday, the brand, which is really crazy. I didn't realize it had only been around for 40 years, but I also hadn't realized that they have a history of being connected to fashion when it comes to their creative directors. So Jean-Paul Gaultier was a previous creative director, I guess, and Marc Jacobs as well.
That's interesting. I don't think I knew that either. And
yeah. And it just, I mean, talk about inaccessible. I mean,
right. High fashion.
That with Diet Coke. So like,
is this a pun of like supermodels, like their diet was just Diet Coke and cigarettes? Is that what they're trying to get?
Totally. I mean, I really do think so. And I also think it's so interesting that prior to them announcing that it was Kate Moss, there had been a lot of photos and even just like videos of different Kardashians and Jenners with Coke and with Diet Coke and talking about it both on their show and then in podcast interviews. Khloe Kardashian did a podcast interview with Not Skinny But Not Fat on Instagram, mm-hmm, and she was drinking a Diet Coke, and Amanda Hirsch, the host from Not Skinny But Not Fat, called it out and was like, she's so relatable. She drinks Diet Coke. She likes her soda. So it's just interesting to me because, again, it goes back to your accessibility piece, but at the same time, nothing about the Kardashians.
But not, It's relatable. Like a walking contradiction. This whole conversation is like one big contradiction.
Exactly. It's so oxymoronic. It's really fascinating. And the Diet Coke thing and the ties to high fashion and trend setting was a connection that I really had never made, but it makes me wonder what their consumer insights data looks like. And if they've found that drinkers of Diet Coke tend to over-index on being fashion forward and caring about fashion.
Right. Yeah. Cause I know I dug into that particular partnership because I was like, wait, like what role is she even playing here? Because, you know, people know her face, they know her modeling work, but like, to what end does this brand work? Like, where does it go? And it seems like, and people can hold me accountable if I didn't get all the details right, it seemed like her big undertaking is to help execute the brand's London Fashion Week activities. How Diet Coke shows up in activations and fashion shows and media all around London Fashion Week, which again goes back to your point of like, what are the connecting points in terms of lifestyle or context of the consumer? You know, frequent drinkers of Diet Coke happen to largely be in fashion or interested in fashion. Like, how do those dots connect? And how does that validate the decision on behalf of the brand as far as who they reach out to be their creative directors? Like, I just think it's a very interesting decision-making process.
100% agree with you. And then you were interested in the differentiation further between founders of, like, at what point do you just found your own brand?
Right.
Where, like, when do you then decide there's no brand that perfectly captures what I'm going for, or, you know, I would have to change a brand too much as a creative director? At what point do you just create what you're looking for?
Right. Yeah. Because when you think of really well-known and successful creative directors or creative leads, you quickly get into like the Reese Witherspoons. Like, she's the creative director and founder of Draper James, her apparel brand. And then you get into the Kardashians. Like, you obviously think about Kim and all of her different product lines, and all of them are created based on like her needs and like what she was looking for in the market and like how she used that to spur product development. So, and of course, Rihanna, right? Like Savage Fenty and, you know, Fenty Beauty, it was all developed based on like her challenges and her needs and expectations for brands. And she was like, I'm just going to do this myself. But she's the face of the brand as well. Like, I just think it's like a very, I don't know if it's like a Venn diagram or like a tart, like a bullseye. Like, I just feel like there are a few different layers or ways that, you know, this idea of a celebrity creative director can come to life.
Totally. Well, and that's where I think we get really meta. And I don't mean meta as in Facebook, but meta yeah. as in like, you know, like double thinking or thinking about the thinking. Mm-hmm. And then, when you watch the latest season of The Kardashians, which is their show that they've had total control over, not only do you see a lot of Diet Coke and Coke, but you also see all of a sudden they're eating those famous salads. They're shaking the salads and they call it out. And I think it was like 3 days prior to that episode with the salad scene, Kris Jenner talked about and debuted her collaboration with the salad company that creates those salads in the transparent containers. And just the timing of the episodes and then their discussion of the brands that they align with is fascinating to me, because it really just shows you we are in this new wave of product placement where we have no idea how many things were actually being sold anymore. I was looking at, you know, when the first instance of product placement occurred, and there's a lot of debate over it. Some would say it was like early 1900s. Some would say it was kind of mid-century. But I think what's so interesting is that it's so subliminal now and so implicit on one side of the spectrum. But then on the other side, you get these extremely sponsored giveaways, posts,
you know, very super staged.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really am curious which consumers prefer and if they have a preference at all, or if there's just a time and a place for each. But we are truly being fed so many brands at so many times. Right. It's wild.
It's so funny. Like, now more than ever, I keep thinking back to the bit in Wayne's World where it's like product placements.
Yes. That came up as an example when I was researching.
Like the way, like, they're just like using taglines of like slowly smiling with the product and holding it up. Like, exactly. And I think there's something to be said about just like the content strategy around all of this, right? Because I do think, to your point, there is a time and a place for both, but I'm almost finding more often, like for me personally, like even if something is staged, like I feel like there needs to be a bit more context around that staging. So like if it's, you know, a luxury handbag, like how do you style that handbag? Or, you know, if it's a, you know, let's pull something out of thin air. Let's say it's like, I've been like following Drew Barrymore's like new home line, right? Like her new air fryer, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way they meticulously curate those kitchen sets to incorporate other products, but it's mostly like her products, right? Like, I think it's staged, but it seems to be more thoughtful and almost editorial. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like, what's like, I'm like, wow, like I want to see more of that. I don't know. I don't have data to back that up, but like, I know I've seen metrics around like consumers want to see how products are used. They want to see how products are styled. They like really want to understand the bigger picture around the product, not just like, oh, that item is pretty. Like they want to maximize, like, especially a luxury product, like, they want to maximize that investment. Mm-hmm. And like, how do you style something? How do I make this work for winter? It's always interesting. There's one, you know, personal stylist that I follow, and it's like always questions around like, okay, I want to buy a Chanel handbag, but like that's so much money, and how do I style it? How do I take good care of it? Like there's a running list of questions that I think consumers have that mm-hmm. can be supported through more thoughtful product placement.
So I love that idea. And I feel like what you're getting at is this craving for cohesion that mm-hmm. we've never really had before. And I do think it goes back to just how visual of a society we've become and how we are becoming more design oriented. There's a lot more desire for just aesthetically pleasing content in general. And because we're getting so used to it, it sticks out like a sore thumb if it's not that way. I follow a lot of stylists on Instagram just because I actually prefer to follow them over influencers, because they're often the ones that are
doing the work.
The trends behind. Exactly. Yeah. Behind the scenes. And I love just seeing a day in the life of their job all the time. But I will probably hopefully stop saying her name after this, but Kim Kardashian's stylist is one of my favorite people to follow. And she was interviewed in some magazine recently saying that stylists and influencers are the ones driving trends and that retailers are no longer the ones setting the trends. And for you and I, who sit in the retail thought leadership space all day, every day, that's a really important piece of knowledge that I think retailers really need to take to heart, that right. they are just trying to produce to keep up with these stylists and these influencers. And if they did hire more stylists themselves instead of buyers, maybe that would be, you know, where they would start to get a little bit more inspired in their collections and cohesive with their content strategies. And maybe that would kind of either replace or really nicely complement the role of a creative director at a retail.
Yeah. And I think it would help kind of expand the view of the data that they get as well. Like, it's not just about what people are saying on your own social platforms. It's what they're saying in those conversations, like on the influencers' Instagram feeds or on the TikTok, you know, try on video. That's why I think, you know, those partnerships are always going to be important, but just like the data you can mine out of all of those conversations and like those product drops and those try on videos, like, there's some really good stuff. Like, I know before we hopped on the line, I shared an influencer's try-on video with you. And like, if you just look at the comments, it's like, oh, well, I don't like that fit. Like, I've tried that fit before, but it's like too narrow. Like, people get in the weeds. So if you have someone from your team, or I guess an entire group of people to go through all of that and get and apply that insight, like, that is super valuable.
100%. And Remy Bader, who got famous basically overnight, she said, via TikTok in the very beginning of the pandemic, doing realistic clothing hauls, very mm-hmm. similar idea. And she would buy stuff from all these different fast fashion houses and even department stores and try them on and say, I can't wear this out. And here's why. And she would show that. And she is now a size and fit consultant for, I want to say, Victoria's Secret, but I'll have to look. But she just said that she is that for a certain brand. And she just launched a collection with Revolve. And she's mm-hmm. the first curvy model to do so. And it's a really big deal that this influencer is able to make these types of waves and speak to a massive group of an audience that is really interested in these brands and doesn't get nearly enough representation and is never heard by the brands. And to your point, if they engaged in more social listening, they looked at the comments and just mined those for even 5 minutes, they would see so much of this. So I think it's almost like, are consumers the creative directors too? Like, is that becoming part of all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's value in consumer advisory boards or communities. I know that's something that we saw with Glossier that worked really well. Like, they were one of the companies that kind of leveraged the media following of Into the Gloss. And then, you know, eventually that turned into a products community and they helped build the brand. There's a skincare brand, Bubble. They have a fascinating story because they're targeting Gen Z, very accessible price point. Like, you can find it and buy it at CVS and Walmart, but it's high end dermatology grade products, you know, to address a lot of those needs that, you know, teens in particular have. And they use their advisory board for everything, not just product development, but like, where do you want us to show up? Like, what does our wholesale strategy look like? Like, how do you want us to grow? Lalo is a beauty brand and they have, a baby brand. They do everything for like high chairs, dinnerware, like everything for babies and toddlers. And they have an advisory board of parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, like whoever is buying that product, they want that comprehensive view of like, what did you look for? Like, what are your struggles? Babylist does the same. They actually have a medical advisory board, which is very interesting. So like you said, the like different interpretations of creative and product directors and like how they impact just that holistic strategy for the business. It's just very interesting and like seeing the different interpretations of that.
Yeah. Well, and my background in consumer insights and my passion for consumer insight driven customer experiences, it's just, I'm like, why are you not tapping into all of these resources that are at your fingertips? Like you have a focus group available to you at any moment in time if you want it. So,
especially because people are so willing to share that insight too. Just do a quick Instagram poll and like, you'll see people like, no, like this is what I want. Like, exactly. And it's instant, it's easy.
Exactly. And a lot of smaller D2C brands do a really good job of that. Actually, Tala, the fitness apparel company that's all sustainable, created by a fitness influencer who left Gymshark because she wanted to create her own sustainable line. She does a fantastic job of kind of gauging pre-order demand via her own Instagram.
Planning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like she'll literally ask her audience, if you want this product that I'm about to create, speak up now or forever hold your peace, because we are a sustainable brand. We make almost exactly as much as we think we're going to sell. I need to hear from you now or it will be sold out. And when you complain, I'm not going to care. And I think it's phenomenal. Like, it's great. So, I mean, this is all I feel really coming back to brands needing to balance being relatable and really tapping into their customers' needs and wants, but then also being aspirational so that people are inspired by their visual imagery that they associate with their brand. So it's a fine line for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Well, is there anything else you wanted to speak to that you were excited about and we didn't cover? This was a pretty comprehensive conversation.
I know. I feel like we went down a rabbit hole a little bit. I think there's a lot here. I think the big takeaway for me, just, you know, doing the research and then us kind of unpacking this together, which I always love to do with you, is just the intention that goes behind the act, not just like, okay, like who's supervising and like, who do we need to get in front of our audience to, you know, build up our brand clout a little bit. I think the most impactful examples that we've talked about today, you know, there is that natural tie in somehow between the creative director and the brand. Either they're current users of the product or fans of the product, or there's just really organic alignment with, you know, the values, the missions, or the lifestyles of that individual. So I think with anything content related, like it just needs to be thoughtful, it needs to be intentional, and it needs to be aligned with what your consumer is expecting as well, whether that creative director is a celebrity or whether it's an influencer, or it could be just, you know, a consumer that is super passionate about the brand, right? So always tie it back to your strategy and always just make sure, you know, you're making those decisions with good intentions.
Yeah, I really like what you just mentioned, though, about, I mean, essentially, don't be disruptive just to be disruptive. Don't pick a creative director that is going to capture all this buzz for a minute and then not actually help you drive your strategy further. That's a very short-term vision, and it's not going to lead to long-term success, which I really like. Yeah. It needs to be a holistic vision.
Yeah, and people will sniff that out real fast. They'll be like, what happened to that person? Like, what did they do?
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. I'm really curious. I would love to know what Kate Moss is doing. Like, how much can we attribute to what she's doing? I mean, if she is behind the scenes doing all these things and it is driving growth for Diet Coke, fantastic. But if it just got everyone excited and interested, waiting to see, and then nothing really happens, then how successful of a decision was that? So I'm really curious.
Right. There must be some really interesting metrics there that they report on. So maybe that'll be part two.
Exactly. Give us your metrics. We want to know. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we did this because we were able to dig into everything live together. So
Yeah, there's been a lot of buildup for this topic for a while. It's such a fun topic for sure.